Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. We now know the lineup for the statewide major party candidates for campaign 2016. That's because the filing deadline to submit petitions was yesterday afternoon at 5 o'clock. There are a number of primary races, including the Democratic nomination for governor, the Republican gubernatorial contest, and the Democratic race for lieutenant governor. Today on Vermont Edition, we've got a group of the state's best political reporters to look at the people and issues of these races. And with us now, Terry Hallenbeck of 7 Days, and Galloway of VT Digger, and VPR's Pete Hirschfeld. Great to have you all here.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you. Thanks for having us, Bob.
You can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Now, if you want to time your call to our discussion, we're first going to talk about the Democratic gubernatorial race, and then in the second section, we're going to talk about the Republican contest for governor, and then the Democratic race for lieutenant governor. Your thoughts, your comments about this campaign 2016, 1-800-639-2211. How do you think these races are shaping up? What are the key issues that these candidates should be considering? Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. So let's start off looking at the Democratic race for governor and talk about Sue Minter. She's a former representative from Waterbury. She served as the state's Irene Recovery Officer in 2011 and 2012. She also served as Transportation Secretary in the Shumlin administration. She told the Democratic convention last Sunday that finding ways to strengthen the Vermont economy is one of her top priorities.
You know that I have the vision, the passion, and yes, the experience to get this done. I know that we have to grow our economy to make more livable wage jobs, to create an economy where young people want to stay and come to Vermont and grow their families and businesses. I want to support our working families.
Terry, Minter touts her legislative experience, and she really highlights her experience as the Irene Recovery Officer. How well known is she around the state, and is this a good resume for her to be running for governor?
Well, I think the Irene background, she did get out to a lot of the rural parts of, this, particularly in southern Vermont, and that is a strong case to make that she helped rebuild quickly some roads and bridges, some towns, and understands how to rebuild a downtown. But, the challenge will be it will tie her to Shumlin, and Shumlin was, not popular on his way out. That's going to be a difficulty for her. And I think a lot of people don't know who the transportation secretary is, all the time. So she has some name recognition to overcome.
Pete, what about that tie to the Shumlin administration? Is she going to be the candidate of the three that are running that is tied the closest to Shumlin? And is that a good thing, a bad thing, or maybe it doesn't make a difference?
Yeah, probably. The thing about the Agency of Transportation is in many ways it's sort of this island of state government that is in many ways insulated from some of the choppier political waters that an administration might face. I think it's going to be tough for people to tie her to some of the higher profile troubles that the administration has gone through, be it Vermont Health Connect, say, or poor oversight of the EB-5 program that led to that alleged scandal there. And are there people who are looking to go totally in an opposite direction from Peter Shumlin who are going to be put off by the fact that she happened to work for him? Probably. Are those people that would otherwise vote for Sue Minter? I'm not sure that they are. And as Terry pointed out, Sue Minter is using that element of her resume to bolster the case for her candidacy, and her work in the Irene Recovery Office as transportation secretary says, here's the evidence you need to see that I can not only navigate state bureaucracies, but innovate them in ways that are going to allow me to be a really effective chief executive.
And as you look at Sue Minter's strengths and weaknesses, how would you describe them?
Well, I think she's a very competitive person, and I think she's really getting in there in the debates. She's not no shrinking violet, so she steps up and speaks articulately about the issues. On the other hand, you know, it's not really clear exactly what she's going to do to improve the economy. She talks a lot about how it would be great if we had a better economy, but it's not clear to me exactly how she'd do that. And she's taken a strong stance on gun control, which is unusual. She's right out there saying, look, we've got to do something about the connection between gun violence and domestic violence in particular. And that distinguishes her somewhat from candidates in the past, although at a forum recently, both Peter Galbraith and Matt Dunn said that they would also like to see more gun control. The Republicans, Bruce Lissman and Phil Scott, demurred on that point. So that could be a bigger issue for the general than it is for the primary.
And today on the program, we're looking at some of the major party primary races. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. Right now, we're looking at the Democratic race for governor. Your thoughts about these candidates, 1-800-639-2211. Let's turn about and talk about Matt Dunn. He's a former member of the Vermont House and Senate. He ran unsuccessfully for governor in 2010. And for lieutenant governor in 2006. Most recently, he worked as the community affairs director for Google.
But I want to be clear with all of you here as Democrats and as we stand here in Barrett that window closes if Phil Scott is elected.
No doubt.
All progress that we have made will stop. And we cannot afford that to happen. And I am ready to beat Phil Scott.
So, Pete, what do you see as the strengths and the weaknesses of the Dunn candidacy?
Matt Dunn has run for statewide office twice before. He has a built-in core of support. He understands the machinery of running a statewide campaign, and that gives him a built-in advantage over two competitors who have never done this before. He's got some big ideas. He wants to invest $100 million in energy efficiency across the state, wants to create a special fund to do that. He wants to have guaranteed debt-free graduation for students who go to UVM or the state colleges and then follow that up with 2 years of service either in AmeriCorps or the military. So he's got some really concrete proposals that left-leaning, high-information primary voters might find appealing. The weakness potentially is the fact that he's run for statewide office twice before and has never been able to muster the mass appeal needed to win either of those elections. The question is there a natural ceiling for Matt Dunn in terms of his appeal with voters, and has he hit it? And we'll find out in the primary whether or not he's able to overcome that hurdle that in the previous elections he was unable to.
You know, Terry, as Pete mentioned, he's run twice before. That gives him the idea of how to set up a campaign structure. But he's lost twice before. Is that a factor here at all?
Well, I think you can lose and then go on to win. And, a lot of people have done it. Peter Welch has done it. Peter Shumlin has done it. So it's not insurmountable. I think Matt Dunn's difficulty is sometimes he has trouble articulating what he means by what he says. You know, his ideas tend towards big and vague and esoteric, and I think like he's going to have to, you know, learn how to speak more plain, simple English, and just be willing to just keep saying the same thing over and over in a real simple way that he has not yet mastered.
You know, Ann, when he ran for governor in 2010, he seemed to really energize a lot of young people all across the state. Is that one of his goals this time around, to bring a lot of young people into the process?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I think he, like you said, he did well with that in 2010, and he's attempting to do that again in this election cycle. You know, the question is whether or not what he's saying is really resonating, and I agree with Terry that he could be much more concrete in the way he describes his proposals. And for some reason, he's not able to really connect with voters in the way other candidates have in the past. So I think he, you know, really does need to you know, focus on his message a little bit more and, you know, work on his charisma in a weird way. I mean, he's a very charismatic guy, but making connections doesn't seem to be a strong thing for him. On the other hand, he's highly organized. He has lots of money. He's got ideas. And he's sounding issues that the Progs, you know, have been interested in promoting for some time. He's really trying to identify with Bernie Sanders in a strong way, and that could appeal to younger voters.
Certainly another candidate who is appealing to Bernie Sanders supporters in Vermont is Peter Galbraith. He's a former state senator, also served as ambassador to Croatia between 1993 and 1998 in the Clinton administration. As I mentioned, he's been a strong supporter of Bernie Sanders. He's backing many of Sanders' economic and health care policies. Here he is at the Democratic State Convention last Sunday.
With Bernie Sanders at the helm, we, the Democrats of Vermont, have started a political revolution in America. Let us now bring that revolution to Vermont. Let's elect a governor committed to economic justice and to fighting inequality. Let's elect a governor who will overturn a Montpelier culture where special interests triumph all too often over the broader public interest.
So, Terry, is Peter Galbraith trying to position himself as the outsider in this race? Is he running against the so-called Montpelier establishment?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's definitely going for that. You know, he's trying to say that I'm the one who was really unpopular in the Senate in trying to ban corporate contributions, and now I'm pushing that issue in the campaign trail and making that a point of discussion among his rivals. And he's also completely out of left field, or in another field, is pushing for a moratorium on wind power, which is typically not a Democratic Party stance, or, you know, not something that they've done in the past. So it's really unclear to me how that plays in the primary of who keys in on supporting him in that way, or who he loses over that.
You know, Ann, we just got this email on that very subject from a listener who wants to know, we're looking for Democratic candidates who are in favor of renewable energy, wind and solar. And we see people like Galbraith trying to thwart the state's renewable energy goals. So Galbraith is out, according to the person writing the email. What about the others? Is this an issue, or how big of an issue is this in the campaign?
You know, it was a factor in Peter Shumlin's race against Scott Milne last time around, and to the extent that he said, you know, there are people all over the state who have their own special interests, and you know, they don't like one thing I do, and so they vote against me because of that. And wind was one of those issues. And so I don't necessarily think that all voters share the perspective of the person who wrote in. But certainly the people who do feel strongly about renewable energy or who are opposed to wind could be galvanized by a candidate like Galbraith in either direction. And that's the risk that a candidate like Galbraith takes by making such a strong stance on something like that. For some, it'll be refreshing. For others, it'll be a turnoff. And I think that that's what's interesting about Galbraith is that, you know, he's really adopted the Bernie platform in a way that, you know, he's gone beyond Dunn and Sue Minter on that. And He was the first to say, you know, I want a $15 an hour minimum wage, and, you know, I definitely want campaign finance reform, and we got to get corporate money out of politics. So I wonder if there's going to be some kind of weird impact from other candidates in the primary. I mean, what if lots of people come out to vote from the Progressive Party to vote for David Zuckerman? Well, it seems like Galbraith is sounding a lot of the issues that the progressives want. I mean, another thing that he's really into is single-payer health care. So maybe there's a possibility he could draw a lot of progressives in and really have an impact on that primary in a way that I think, you know, could be unexpected.
What about the Bernie factor, Pete? As Ann was saying, all three candidates seem to support Sanders, but Galbraith is right out there philosophically with Sanders, perhaps more than the other two candidates, do you think?
Absolutely. And staking out the most liberal turf in this Democratic primary, as Ann noted, I was interested, though, to see the reception of Peter Galbraith at the convention on Sunday, and it was warm. People clapped politely for him, but Terry, you were there too. I didn't see the response as being anywhere nearly as enthusiastic to Galbraith as it was to either Sue Minter or Matt Dunn. And Matt Dunn is a guy who's been working at this for decades now. Sue Minter has been in the politics game for a long time herself, and I think it means something to people when a candidate has invested time over the years in the issues, built up a track record. They feel like they can rely on them, depend on them, because they've seen them maintain those positions over time. Peter Galbraith is relatively new to the scene. He's still something of a wild card, and I wonder if he'll be able to convince people that not only is he going to go to bat for them on these issues, but is he the kind of guy who can move the ball forward on them if he comes to power?
Well, especially since he was so disliked in the legislature. I mean, he really had a tough time in the Senate because he talked an awful lot and people got mad at him, you know. And, so I don't know how that's going to translate in the general election, but, you know, there seems like the base is not all that happy with him.
Right, and in a primary, that really matters.
That
the party faithful aren't with you is very key.
And some of the advocates that cared most deeply about the issues that Galbraith was trying to move forward said Galbraith was the guy who was in many instances getting in the way of those things moving forward. So he's got some work to do to convince people that not only is he going to talk a big game about this stuff, but that he can be the change agent he's saying he's going to be.
Well, we've been looking at the primary contest for the Democratic race for governor in campaign 2016. When we come back, we're going to discuss the Republican gubernatorial primary. What are your thoughts about the GOP primary? Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Phil Scott, Bruce Lissman, your thoughts about those candidates and the issues they're talking about? 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today in the program, we're discussing the statewide primary races that will take place on Tuesday, August 9th. That is 74 days from today. I saw that in a campaign email this morning. Our reporters' roundtable includes Ann Galloway of VT Digger, Terry Hallenbeck of 7 Days, and VPR's Pete Hirschfeld. We're going to look at the Republican race now for governor. And if you have some thoughts, give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Shelburne businessman Bruce Lissman is in the race. He founded Campaign for Vermont. He's a former executive at Goldman Sachs in New York. He's been talking about tightening the budget because he says the state spends more money than it takes in revenue. Lissman also says his primary opponent, Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott, has been too cozy with Democratic Governor Peter Shumlin.
We've had a governor with a lot of bad ideas, and the people are responding by saying, we don't like those ideas. We don't like the direction. Really, the very basic point is the Lieutenant Governor was there, at his side, at the cabinet meetings. So there's a moment when you're supposed to say, no, I don't care about a cabinet post. Who cares? No, this is a bad idea. I don't need to be part of that process. It put a lot of pressure on a small caucus, Republican, in both the House and Senate. It would have been great to have had his outspoken support for alternative ideas.
Now, Lieutenant Governor Scott refutes these charges. He said he stood up to Shumlin on health care and on tax and budget issues. And he says he's very disappointed with the tone of the Lissman campaign.
It seemed like a D.C. style tactic to me, and I think Vermonters expect better. It's not something that I would how I conduct myself, and while I wasn't surprised, I was disappointed that he would resort to these methods. There are many that advocate that you should run your opponent down in order for you to look better, and I've always said in my years of being a public servant that you talk about what you can do and actually advocate for that position rather than what your opponent can't.
So, and Phil Scott did accept an invitation from Peter Shumlin to be in the governor's cabinet, as Lissman points out, Lissman trying to turn that into a negative. What do you think of Lissman's overall strategy here?
Well, he's trying to get attention, and this could be a good way to do it. You know, I think that Vermonters tend to have a low tolerance for negative campaigning, but it's a way to get his name out there. He makes headlines doing it, and, you know, whether or not it'll work for him, I don't know. But he's not known in the state, really, even though he started a campaign for Vermont, an advocacy group. He has that Wall Street thing that could be a problem for him. So he's got to get his name out there, and he's got to sound like he's knowledgeable on the issues. And so tying Phil Scott to Peter Shumlin, well, that I guess it's inevitable in a way, but they're two very different people. So, and Phil Scott's role in the cabinet was sort of marginal, so it's hard to know whether or not that really sticks.
And I misspoke when I described Bruce Lissman's ties with Wall Street. He actually worked for Bear Stearns, just to set the record straight on that. Terry, there are a group of Republicans who really don't like Phil Scott. They've made their objections known over the years. Is this the group that Lissman hopes to target? And is it a large enough group to win the primary?
Well, it's not been a large enough group to win anything in the past. So that's maybe his base, but there's no question he would have to grow that in order to win. And if you want to talk about reaction at state conventions, Phil Scott got a standing ovation. Bruce Lissman didn't. I mean, they politely applauded, but this is a crowd that does not really know Bruce Lissman, and his first introduction to them is sort of this this mailer that where he criticizes Phil Scott for working with Peter Shumlin. And as Ann said, you know, like, it's not like, you know, Phil was in there, you know, next to the governor as the vice chair of the cabinet or something. You know, I don't think he had much of a say in the direction of the administration. So it feels like a long shot for Bruce Lissman to try to in an effort to try to make his name more known.
If you've got some thoughts about this Republican gubernatorial race, give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Maybe you're a Phil Scott supporter or you support Bruce Lissman. Let us know about that and the issues you're concerned about at 1-800-639-2211. Pete, earlier we talked about, was there a Bernie Sanders effect in the Democratic race for governor? I'm wondering, is there a Trump effect in the Republican race, in that Phil Scott has been very outspoken against Donald Trump and says he won't vote for him? I think he's going to write in Jim Douglas's name for president instead. Bruce Lissman has said he's not sure. He wants to research this a little bit more, and he'll make up his mind in a couple of weeks. For the people who support Donald Trump, and he won the Vermont presidential primary with, I think, about 35% of the vote, are those folks going to be put off at all by the fact that Phil Scott says, I don't like this guy?
They are. Many of them have already said in interviews with various news media that it bothers them in the extreme that the standard bearer for the Vermont Republican Party is not willing to close ranks behind the standard bearer for the National Party. I'm not sure that Bruce Lissman is going to be able to tap into that in any meaningful way unless he drapes himself in the Trump candidacy and says, I am unequivocally in support of Donald Trump. I think Donald Trump is going to take this country in the direction it needs to go in. That's the only way he's going to be able to get Trump supporters who wouldn't otherwise be motivated to come out to a Republican gubernatorial primary in the beginning of August to cast a protest vote against Phil Scott for saying the things he's done. So it'll be interesting to see if Lissman does make up his mind on whether or not he's going to support Donald Trump. And if he decides that he is, the extent to which he's going to make that known and the extent to which he's going to suggest that that's a good reason for people who do support Trump to support him as well.
Let's go to our callers and talk to John in Cornwall. Hi, John. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for a great show. Wanted to hear what your experts had to say of Bill Lee, who's just announced that he's running for governor on the Liberty Union Party. And a fascinating character, of course, Red Sox pitcher, And he says he's a liberal with a gun. And he says that he's got the left-wing vote, the right-wing vote. He just needs the people in the middle. So in this crazy year of politics, is there any future for Bill Lee in Vermont?
Well, maybe he could win both primaries.
And, John, that's a subject that we're going to definitely discuss further after the primary. Today we're really focusing on the primary races. And as far as I know, Bill Lee does not have a primary opponent in the Liberty Union race. But, and when we get to the fall and we get to some debates, things are going to be lively.
Indeed. I mean, it's great for entertainment value, if nothing else. And he's run before, so he's done this rodeo.
And percentage points on the margins are going to be a big deal in the general election. This is possibly a race that's going to come down to a few thousand votes. And when you start to have these other figures in the race that have even a marginal impact on turnout and vote count, it can shift the balance in ways that people might not have expected.
So as you look at this race, I'm wondering what you think will be the issues or the factors that will be important in the outcome of this race. Terry, how do you see this sort of going out in the end in the August 9th primary?
Well, I think one of the struggles with making the economy your or economic development your platform is, while you wouldn't really necessarily want a candidate to not touch those issues, it's very hard to articulate what you would do and how you would pull it off. And I haven't really seen a candidate succeed at that yet. So it often comes down to, how do people feel about you? Like, do they trust you? Do they like you? Do they feel like you're in control and that you have good ideas and the ability to pull them off? And that's such an esoteric thing to put a finger on, of, you know, which one's going to emerge as that candidate. But, you know, I think it's going to be much more voter feel.
And what do you think?
Well, I agree that it does come down to personality, unfortunately. You know, we're not as high-minded as we'd like to think as voters, you know. Probably, if we just vote on the issues, we'd end up with very different candidates in some cases than we do. But it'll also depend somewhat on how motivated people are by the stances, to an extent. I think that the messages that Phil Scott and Bruce Lisman are putting out there about the state's budget and how it really needs to be cut, it'll be interesting to see if people are motivated by that. I mean, most of the voters in the state are Democrats, and they won't be participating in that primary. But the two Republican candidates haven't really distinguished themselves that much on the economy, as Terry was saying, and that's true with the Democrats too. So beyond that, it comes down to these side issues like wind, like a commitment to gun control. And I don't know if that's enough really to motivate voters. So, and it doesn't seem like at this point there's a distinction. The parties tend to just let the voters do their thing. They're not going to endorse anybody, of course. So part of what you'll see is the ground game and how that's played out. You know, if each of the candidates has a slightly different approach to knocking on doors and getting people out to vote, that'll make a difference too.
Pete, how do you see this race shaping up?
I think in both the Democratic primary and the Republican primary, one of the big questions that voters are going to be asking themselves is, which candidate gives my side the best chance to win in a general election? And you heard Matt Dunn reference that in his speech that you played a portion of earlier. He's already looking toward that matchup and trying to convince primary voters that the thing we need to be concerned most about is averting a Phil Scott governorship. And I think that Phil Scott is trying to convey the same message to Republican voters, saying, hey, we've had 6 years of Peter Shumlin. We've had 6 years of overwhelming Democratic majorities in both the House and Senate. This state needs to shift course. And if you want to pick a guy who's going to be in the best position to do that, I have a proven track record that I'm that person.
You know, Terry, earlier Pete was talking about the Bill Lee influence and that, you know, just a couple of thousand votes here and there could make a difference in the general election in November. Where are the progressives when it comes to having a gubernatorial candidate? Well, before Peter Galbraith got into the race, they didn't seem very happy with either Matt Dunn or Sue Minter. Is there any possibility that they might run a candidate this year?
No.
No way.
I mean, they've been clear that they don't have a candidate, that they want to put their resources elsewhere. They're putting more eggs in the basket of Lieutenant Governor and David Zuckerman's campaign. The party chose not to endorse any of the Democratic candidates. So they're not entirely happy with Peter Galbraith, Sue Minter, or Matt Dunn, which was quite telling. And they feel burned from having supported Peter Shumlin in 2010. And he didn't deliver them as much as they wanted on health care and economic issues. But they are the progressives. It's interesting. They are developing kind of, you know, they've done this thing with the Senate seats in the past, but now they're doing it with the House seats where they're all running in Democratic primaries. So you don't have anybody declaring themselves a progressive candidate at this point. They are Democratic candidates, and then they're going to seek the progressive party line through a write-in vote in that primary. And that is a strategy that's worked to help them get people elected to the Senate and to the auditor's office, but it could ruffle some feathers among Democrats because it could knock out a Democrat in that primary.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Ron in Shelburne. Hey, Ron, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you. And first of all, thank you for this show. It's a very important and valuable asset you folks bring to our state every day. So thank you. I just wanted to talk about Phil Scott. He's been a lieutenant governor for 6 years. And we've got other people like Joe Benning and Don Turner. They're up there in the minority fighting the good fight ardently and passionately against the decimation our governor's brought. And He gets upset when somebody calls him out on that. Whenever you get called out, it's not the Vermont way. He's a nice guy. You can't deny that. But he has not been an effective leader for our party. That's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Okay, Ron, it was interesting. And Joe Benning, senator from Caledonia County, wrote a commentary recently saying, you know, it's pretty tough when you're in the minority. I think, what, there are 9 Republicans senators in the Vermont Senate. And a big majority for the Democrats in the House. And Senator Benning's argument was, you know, when you're in the minority by that much, it's tough to have an impact. But this is the argument that Bruce Lisman is bringing right now to Phil Scott. He's not effective. He hasn't stood up for us. Where's the big fight? He should have been leading the loyal opposition at the State House. Your thoughts?
Well, 2 things. I mean, he is lieutenant governor, and that's a role that doesn't, you know, he's presiding over the Senate, but he doesn't have a direct role in how the legislature really does its business, with the exception of selecting committee chairs. But also, you know, he is a guy who is more interested in consensus more often than not, and he says that about himself. He's not interested in conflict necessarily, and so he has tried to go along, get along to an extent. That said, he's come out with Vermont Health Connect with an interest in really going to the federal exchange now, and at one point, you know, he berated the governor for not making more progress on bettering the system. So it's not like he was always appeasing the Democrats. I think that he was trying to get what he could done in the legislature. And Joe Benning's right. It's really hard in the minority to make a big dent because you don't have the opportunity to set the agenda. That's set by the leaders, the House Speaker and the Senate President Pro Tem, and by the governor's office. And if you don't have any of those 3 power bases, you don't have as much say in what happens. So it is more difficult to have such a small minority in the legislature for the Republicans. The Democrats, of course, have enjoyed it.
Today in the program, we're looking at some of the statewide primary contests that will take place on Tuesday, August 9th. Coming up next, we're going to look at the Democratic race for lieutenant governor. Your thoughts? 1-800-639-2211. Three candidates running for lieutenant governor. You might support one of them or be concerned about some of the issues that they're raising. 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today in the program, we're looking at the contested primary races that will take place on Tuesday, August 9th. Our panel of reporters includes Terry Hallenbeck of 7 Days, VPR's Pete Hirschfeld, and Ann Galloway of VT Digger. We're going to talk about the Democratic race for lieutenant governor. Perhaps you have some thoughts about it. Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Let's start off with David Zuckerman. He has served in both the House and the Senate. He is a member of the Progressive Party. He's also been elected as a Democrat. He runs a farm, and agricultural issues have been a top priority for him. He's also a strong supporter of Bernie Sanders.
I am so proud of what he's done, and I'm extremely excited to be running for statewide office when he is running for president, to be a part of that revolution that he's talking about. I will keep Bernie's message alive here in Vermont so we can once again be a role model for the nation. We have challenges to overcome, and I'm prepared to help lead that effort. I'm ready to bring my leadership, facilitation skills, and experiences both inside and outside the State House to Montpelier.
So, Ann, Terry was touching on this earlier in the last segment about a lot of the progressives running in a Democratic primary and then seeking, if they win, seeking the nomination of the Progressive Party as well, and that some Democrats aren't actually very happy about this. How does that play out in this race for lieutenant governor?
Well, Zuckerman is the most prominent progressive that is, you know, running, and because he's the only one who's taken on a statewide race, and it could have a bit of a backlash for him if Democrats are that adamant about only electing their own. But Zuckerman is quite popular, and you know, he really does, I think, have a shot against Shap Smith and Keisha Ram. So, you know, I'm not really sure how the party faithful are going to react to him. You know, I think a lot of them are probably divided behind Shap and Keisha at this point. So, I don't really know how he's going to do with the party faithful.
It sounds so far like the party itself has not shared their voter checklist with David Zuckerman, and that could become an issue, you know, if they treat the candidates differently. And I think, like, it's changing. You know, I think what we saw at the convention was that there were so many Bernie supporters at the Democratic State Convention that I think people are starting to change their identification of, you know, Bernie's a Democrat now, sort of. So they are maybe people who were not maybe active in Democratic politics. Those party labels are fading for them, and they don't necessarily see it as you're not allowed to elect that sort of person in our party.
Well, a second candidate in the race is Keisha Ram. She's been elected to 4 terms in the Vermont House. She's been working in the Community and Economic Development Office in the city of Burlington, and she told Democrats last weekend that the party needs to focus on some critical economic issues.
We need to get beyond some of the splashy issues to what really Vermonters are asking from us to move our state forward. And for me, that is access to early childhood education, affordable higher education, homeownership, and high-speed broadband internet connectivity so we do not face a digital divide continuously in the state. And about broadband, I would say mission not accomplished. And many of you experience that.
So, Terry, what do you think are the strengths and weaknesses of Keisha Ram's candidacy?
She is very articulate, as she showed there. You know, I think a pretty powerful speaker. I think people probably feel like she's the least experienced of the three candidates, and maybe the least well known. As she keeps reminding people, don't underestimate her, as people have always done. So I think she's going to be a factor. I think she will struggle. The more the campaign goes on, she may struggle to find an identity in that three-way race.
And she's also brings a different perspective to politics than the one that absolutely dominates what we have today, in that she's not a older white male. And she talks about this. You know, she's got an Indian immigrant father, a Jewish mom, and she feels like she brings a perspective on the world that is sorely lacking among statewide office holders today and among top legislative leaders today. And she feels like this is something that's going to resonate with the electorate at large, that's looking to include some new faces and some new voices in the halls of political power in Vermont.
And the third candidate in the race, Morristown Representative Shap Smith, he has served in the House for the past 14 years. He's been Speaker for the last eight. He had been a candidate for governor, but withdrew from the race when his wife was diagnosed with cancer. She's responded very well to treatment, and he jumped into this race right after the end of the legislative session. Here he is at the Democratic Convention in Barrie.
We want to move in the right direction. We don't want to be paralyzed by purity. We want to make sure that we're moving in the right direction and that we're making progress for all Vermonters. And that's what I'll do as Lieutenant Governor. I will work to make sure that this place is a better place, because this is where I was raised, this is where I'm raising my kids, and this is where I want all of us to have opportunities in the next generation.
Pete, that's a very interesting line. Don't be paralyzed by purity. We can talk about that in a little bit, but this is a late entry into the race. The others had been organized for some time. How much does that hurt, Shap Smith?
Probably less than it would hurt other candidates who are entering this late. He's able to maintain a statewide presence as House Speaker over those winter months when he wasn't in either race. He also was a candidate for governor, during which time he was able to build some grassroots coalitions, get a core campaign going, reach out to some of the key constituencies that you need to win operations like this. But it does put him at a disadvantage, if only because he hasn't been able to raise as much money as some of his competitors. He does have a lot of people in establishment circles in Montpelier who are going to be working really hard to help him overcome those hurdles. And he's positioned in such a way that if anybody can overcome a May entry into a statewide race, it's probably Shap Smith.
You know, we got this interesting email, not about any race in particular, but about all the races in general. What would happen if no political parties existed in Vermont? Could Vermont outlaw the party system? What do the guests think would be the result of that? It's not a direct analogy, but in California, you really don't have party primaries as such anymore. You've got people running, let's say, for governor, and you might have 15 candidates, and the top two make it into the general election. Now, they both might be Republicans. They both might be Democrats. I mean, the way things are broken down, that generally does not happen. But it's an interesting thought, Anne.
Well, you know, it's interesting in part because it's sort of happening in a way. I mean, I think you see more and more independents running for House seats. Last go-round, there were quite a few that got in, more than the Progressive Party had in the House. And who knows what's going to happen in the general election? You could see, I could see Peter Galbraith or Bruce Lissman decide to run as independents after the primary. They're both well-heeled, and you know, they could make a shift. So I don't know. I mean, of course, it's a very idealistic question from the listener, but I sometimes wonder what it would be like with so much without the partisanship that we see. And it's not nearly as bad here in Vermont as it is nationally, but people do tend to hew to party lines, and that sometimes limits the debate.
Go ahead. It was interesting. Teo Jagar, I believe a Barnard representative, announced that he's not going to be seeking re-election, and he had some parting words in a Facebook post or a campaign message to all the supporters where he called for the end of the two-party system, saying it was toxic to the environment in Montpelier and that it was a real hurdle to getting things done. And this is a guy who has a D next to his name, and so it's not just this writers expressing this sentiment. There are people who exist inside that two-party system that feel like it's not working.
And we want to mention that the Republican candidate for lieutenant governor, former state auditor Randy Brock, does not have a primary opponent, so he will be on the general election ballot in November. We'll certainly be following these races very closely in the weeks and months ahead. Many thanks to our panel today, Ann Galloway, Terry Hallenbeck, and Pete Hirschfeld. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
That is Vermont Edition for today. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Sangeri and Sam Gale Rosen. We had production assistance from Liam Connors. Mary Williams directed the program. Our executive producer is Patty Daniels. Vermont Edition will be back on Tuesday. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great Memorial Day weekend.